Order. We have a very full agenda today, and we have a lot of people here on House Bill 3026. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3026. Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. House Bill 3026 relates to what, under existing law, is the crime of failure to maintain a metal purchase record. Existing ORS 165.107 creates a Class B misdemeanor of failing to maintain a metal purchase record. This offense relates generally to the problem of drug users, usually methamphetamine users, financing their habit through stealing and then recycling metal for money. The focus of this bill is on the metal recycler, or this statute is on the metal recycler dealer. Rather than allowing a no-questions-asked commerce in non-ferrous, meaning not containing iron scrap metal, the dealer must record certain information about each transaction, and this would try to inhibit nefarious sellers. Presently, the dealer must retain the following information for at least 1 year and make it available to any officer. First of all, a description of the property purchased. Secondly, the type, quantity, and weight of property. Third, the name, address, and signature of the seller. And four, the type and license plate of the seller's car. House Bill 3026 makes several substantive changes to ORS 165.107. First of all, it replaces the word person in existing law with scrap metal dealer, and it provides a specific definition of what a scrap metal dealer is. Second, it removes the existing requirements for what a record must contain, and it replaces them with the following. First, the record must contain, under the new law, one, the date and time of the transaction, two, the name of the person conducting the transaction for the dealer, three, a general description of the property, including any readily discernible marks, four, a copy of the seller's license, passport, or ID card, five, the amount of consideration given, six, if the amount is over $100, a declaration by the seller that the metal was not stolen, seven, video surveillance of the seller, which must be retained for 30 days, and then eight, the vehicle license plate of the seller. Third, and perhaps most significantly, House Bill 3026A replaces the existing criminal sanctions for failure to maintain a record and replaces these with a civil fine system. The first, second, and third offenses result in a $1,000 fine. The fourth or subsequent offenses result in a $5,000 fine. Finally, then, House Bill 3026A applies these same rules for record keeping and the fine system to places such as pawn shops, secondhand dealers, et cetera, that would also be dealing in non-ferrous metal.
Okay, we have several representatives who'd like to talk on this. Brune, Boone, Olson, Clem, and Schaffler, representative in front of all those names. I'll pull up a chair, Representative Clem.
Rookie was the correct terminology.
Representative Schaffler, I'm glad you could make it because I gave you some false information a few minutes ago.
Whoa.
Yeah. We'll start with Representative.
I don't have a comment for that one.
We'll start with Representative, anybody but Representative Olson, because you misspelled my name on this communication.
Ooh. Excuse the you, ma'am. Madam Chair.
Ooh. Here.
So I'll let you fight among yourselves.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair.
My
name is Andy Olson, and I'm a state representative from the Albany area. And my colleagues up here and I, we'd just like to promote House Bill 3026, which is the metal theft bill. You have written testimony in front of you. I think you did a good job of explaining what the bill is and everything. I do want to share with you that last year during the summer, Jeff Stone from the Oregon Association of Nurserymen, who participated in organizing this group, and I believe he's going to be testifying a little bit later on this one, work group, and what you have today in front of you with this House bill is a result of an extreme amount of hard work and consensus building. I do want to share on the second page about a portion of it, the intent of what this bill is as well. And it's toward the last portion of the page. It's House Bill 3026 is not intended to apply to solid waste and recycling facilities that accept without payment, and that's a key part there, non-ferrous metals or alloys for the purpose of recycling or disposal. Such facilities include transfer stations, material recovery facilities, processors of recyclables, and drop-off depots. This bill is also not intended to apply to processors of recyclables and material recovery facilities that buy recyclable materials from solid waste and recycling haulers. But I think it also goes without saying, since the main target for this was to pursue the meth addicts, to try to dry up that issue and to stop metal theft altogether. Meth users aren't going to be voluntarily going and dropping off metal to these locations. So with that, you have my testimony.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to go next. Chair Burdick and senators, my name is Debbie Boone, and I represent House District 32, the Upper Left Coast. And Representative Olson said a lot of the same of my long testimony here, but I just wanted to add one of the things that I had found out when I started looking into this, too, is in the rural areas especially bad because of the reduction in some of the law enforcement agency staff and personnel. And so even, you know, some people who may even be in maybe Joseph, Oregon, where there's a lot of sculptors, metal sculptors, might be experiencing a little higher rate of theft in you know, areas that we wouldn't suspect that they might be. And also just the desperate nature of some of the people, as Representative Olson pointed out, the meth users are doing this a lot more than they did before. And they carry weapons, and when you're faced in your barn with somebody who's trying to take they've stolen a truck to haul away your metal and equipment and things like that, and they're armed, it's an hour or so before you can get a police officer, sheriff's deputy there. It's pretty scary. And I have heard from people within my own neighborhood the same thing that's going on. So this, when Jeff Stone from the Nurseryman came to me and asked if I would help sponsor this, I was happy to do so. So I hope you will pass this bill out today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Schoffler, State Representative, House District 48, Happy Valley, Southeast Portland. And, yeah, I just want to thank Jeff, too, Jeff Stone, again. They had this work group, and they did a lot of hard work sorting all this out and bringing us a product that will help us fight meth. And there's a lot of this going on out in the developing areas like Happy Valley, Damascus. They're just walking away with everything they can possibly carry off. And I've been a victim of it, had stuff stole off my job site. Used to be tools, and then it's increasingly metals and tearing heads off irrigation systems, which was a new one for me, but it's a good bill, should pass, and I appreciate you hearing it today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Scott Bruin, House District 37, and obviously the pros for this bill have been well stated. It protects private property, and it's part of our battle against meth. I want to tell you how I came to this bill in my private life. I'm a contractor, and just in 2006 had two very interesting events, not interesting, but two criminal events that happened to our company that just real quickly were sharing. First of all, my company builds commercial construction. We were working on a cultural arts center and remodeled a cultural arts center in the Jansen Beach area. That's the Hooters restaurant that's up there. And and we had a break-in where the theft stole a large amount of metal and wiring out of the building, and it was a $25,000 cost of materials, which is enough in its own right, but it put back our construction time 3 weeks. And when you're as a general contractor trying to meet a deadline, the clients don't care about, you know, those sorts of issues. It's our responsibility. So the cost to make that happen was far and above the $25,000 of the stolen property. Also, last summer, in our shop yard, our headquarters itself, on very early on a Sunday morning, we were broken into in our backyard, in our back shop yard, and a bunch of supplies were taken out, and the perpetrator had backed his truck up there, and he was pulling just all sorts of metal back in there. And the good news about this one was that every time, it was very early Sunday morning, nobody's around, but every time he turned around like this to look to see if anybody was looking, he was looking right into our camera that's up on top of the building. So we had just a great video image of this guy. Of course, we gave it to the police. They ran it on all the evening news in Portland, and they had the guy within 3 or 4 days, and he is in prison right now. The interesting thing about that particular perpetrator is that he had a long-standing record of thefts to fuel his methamphetamine habit. Once again, it's been a wonderful coalition that's helped work with us. I want to also publicly recognize Jeff Stone for the tremendous work he has done to put this together, and I have no idea what Jeff Stone has paid, but whatever it is not enough.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Clem, State Representative for House District 21. I had actually just been talking to some farmers about the thefts on their properties, and I didn't know about the work group, and so I had drawn up a separate bill that was dealing with some of these issues. And Jeff Stone, in this case, instead of getting me on the work group, he said, can you just let the work group sort of work? and I looked at what they were doing and said, yeah, that's a good idea. So I sort of stopped pushing my bill and hopped on the bandwagon. It certainly is a situation where Salem area's got a huge problem. We have a thing called No Meth, Not in My Neighborhood Task Force. It tries to think of all ways from prevention to law enforcement to get at the meth issue. This is just another one. Marion County has lots of farms and lots of implements that end up falling prey to this kind of thing. So it's a very good process. I'm, like I said, very late to the table, and so thank my colleagues for their work, and I'm glad to lend support to this effort.
Thank you, and I've followed the work of this group. It's been a wonderful process to watch. When I first saw the size of the work group, I was a little concerned that anything would be able to happen, but you guys have really produced a nice product, a bipartisan product, and Senator Beyer and I were two of the four members of the meth work group last session, and believe me, we heard about this over and over with farmers losing their irrigation material, home builders losing their wiring from their houses under construction. So thank you for bringing us this bill, and thank you for bringing yourselves to us during a very busy time of the session.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Senator Beyer. Yeah,
like
sit down, everybody.
No question. I'd just like to thank you. I still don't think anybody tops the stories from my district where they stole the railings off the bridges.
Oh, yeah.
And just recently, I know of a person out in my district who he had an older house on his property, and he was in one day they stripped all the wiring out of a house. This isn't a house being constructed. This was a house. They stripped all the wiring out of the house. The person did get shocked because it was hooked up to electricity when they went to take it out of the
house.
Okay, Senator Pruszynski, your
turn. I may not be able to top it now since you put in the shock, but there are actually people, we've had a lot of the utilities, co-ops, and there are others that have come forward, and I really appreciate what the work group has done, because my understanding at one point you had two or three different groups that were kind of meeting on their own. Everything came together, but they're actually having people that are stupid enough to actually go into live areas, these substations, and actually are removing the wire. And it just, you know, it tells you they're a little dim somewhere, but they're going to get lit up.
Well, once in a while, one of them bites the dust. In my district, we've lost several of those fire fixtures. I don't know what they call those.
Manhole covers?
The big pipes that they have outside of buildings, so if there's a fire, the fire department.
Stem pipes?
Yeah, we've lost a number of those. And I lost my water meter cover from outside my house recently. So thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you.
Okay, Jeff Stone and Celeste Davis. Now, Jeff, I have extensive testimony from you, and I don't want to hear anything else from you aside from how wonderful you are and all the work you did on this.
And how much of a pay raise you really do want.
And how much of a pay raise you really want.
Madam Chair, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries, a joint letter to my boss would be wonderful about my pay. Seriously, this has been a terrific coalition. I have extensive remarks plus all the comments from the coalition partners. So I won't go into that, but it has been a remarkable coalition of utilities, construction, metal recyclers who are a victim as well as agriculture and law enforcement. So we've all come together. You mentioned the size of the group. I remember that meeting very well, Chair Burdick, and we've been able to get it across to you today. And so I appreciate your time. I encourage you to pass this forward to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Ms. Davis.
My name is Celeste Davis. I represent a group of business people who've been tremendously affected by metal theft, conjunctively over several hundred thousand dollars, and we just are here to ask for your support in passing this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming. Are there any questions? Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3026. Open a work session on House Bill 3026. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, move House Bill 3026 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 3026 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, you had the best story, I think. It was close, but I think you won because the electricity was on when the House was... So you will carry this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, you should have embellished the substation thing. That might have done it.
Well, it was on. It just didn't get lit up.
Okay. Let's just be yours. Okay, before we move on, we are going to move House Bill 2333 over till next Tuesday, if anybody's here for that. Okay, we'll do open a public hearing on House Bill 2150. Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. House Bill 2150A is a product of the Governor's Underage Drinking Task Force, or the Attorney General's Underage Drinking Task Force. ORS 471.346 sub 3 authorizes the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to investigate vendors for selling alcohol to underage persons through random decoy operations. Presently, OLCC must conduct such operations on a random basis in cities with populations of over 20,000 people. To the, quote, greatest extent possible, close quote, there must be an equal chance that any vendor will be subject to such an operation. This equal chance provision creates an alleged problem for OLCC and related law enforcement in large cities, especially Portland, because law enforcement must conduct random minor decoy operations over the entire city, resulting in travel across a large metropolitan area. Since these operations must be randomly selected all over the Portland metropolitan area. Under current law enforcement cannot focus on a smaller portion of an entire area unless there is a documented compliance problem in that smaller area. House Bill 2150A addresses this supposed problem by allowing the OLCC to break up cities, populations of over 70,000 is how the bill defines it, to break up cities into smaller geographical areas with individual populations of 20,000. Thus, the operations would no longer need to be completely random throughout an entire metropolitan area. They would only need to be random within a specific geographical region of 20,000.
Okay. I won't sing your name, but Phil Schradl.
Mr. Burdick, members of the committee, Philip Schradl, special counsel to the Attorney General. The goal behind House Bill 2150 is to essentially treat large cities the same as cities over 20,000. As Committee Counsel Stanford was telling you, currently under Oregon statutes, if a city is 20,000 or more, you can conduct random minor decoy operations within that city. Within the city of Portland, that means, however, it needs to be conducted over the entire geographical area of the entire metropolitan area, which would mean that if you were doing a random decoy operation, you may have to go to the edge of Beaverton, and then the next site on your random operation might be on the edge of Gresham. What the purpose behind this bill would be to treat large cities the same as cities that are 20,000 or more, and they still must be conducted completely on a random operation within that 20,000 person geographical area. And I've provided written testimony to you both from myself on behalf of the Underage Drinking Task Force and then also from Police Chief Sizer from Portland supporting this proposal and describing for you the concerns that law enforcement have and that the Underage Drinking Task Force has. Essentially what this is all about would be just to make for more efficiency. It does not change the randomness requirement or subject anybody to any further scrutiny than currently exists. It is simply an efficiency matter that will allow the resources to be better allocated to conduct these random decoy operations. And so essentially, for a city of the size of Woodburn, you can have a random decoy operation and conduct it there, and it is over the entire city. This would be simply kind of an overlay on Portland metropolitan area or other large city areas that would allow you to do a random minor decoy operation in the equivalent of Woodburn within the scope of Portland. And so all this does is change the efficiencies for law enforcement personnel.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Senator Byer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who's going to do the gerrymandering?
Chair Burdick, Senator Byer, it needs to be done on preordained geographical descriptive areas within. It isn't a random thing where you just select. It has to be done in advance. They're already prescribed geographical areas.
Where?
Senator Pruszynski. I'm sorry.
Chair Burdick, Senator Byer, they're not designated there. They would be designated, I believe, by OLCC rule.
More questions?
No, I have none. Okay.
Senator Pruszynski.
I wonder if council or if Schradl.
If
either of you can give us the background, the history as to why, when this bill was apparently first passed, they had a different standard for Portland than what you're asking for today.
Chair Burdick, Senator Pruszynski, there wasn't a different standard for Portland. It was that for every city over 20,000 you could conduct random minor decoy operations. There wasn't any differentiation between a large city or a small city. When we proposed this bill on behalf of the task force and presented it on the House side, the original proposal was to address the major problem, which is Portland. So the original proposal that was submitted on the House side would have applied it only to metropolitan areas of 500,000 or more, so to be able to break up Portland into smaller cities, essentially. It had so much support on the House Judiciary Committee that they, by committee amendment, broke that number down to the 70,000 figure that's currently before you. And it passed unanimously on the House side, and that was what generated the figure that's before you now, at the 70,000 figure. That would mean that for cities essentially, Portland, Eugene, Salem, that you could break those cities up into essentially 20,000 or more cities. So in Salem, you could have five mini-cities. And that was what generated the number that came from the House Judiciary Committee support itself.
Senator Pruszynski, if I might, my recollection is the same as Mr. Schradl's, that I believe Representative Cameron in the House said, what are we doing with 500,000? What is it, somebody going to want to come back and make it lower? You know, what about Salem? What about et cetera? So the idea was pick a number. So basically, I grabbed an Oregon City population chart and found one that seemed to capture most of the major cities. And that's really all the science that went into that number.
Okay.
And if law enforcement or whoever decides that one area of a city is a bigger problem than another area, they can focus more attention on those areas as long as they're random?
Chair Burdick, no, this would need to be conducted under this statute on a random basis within the geographical area that was pre-designated. I believe, and there are representatives from Oregon Liquor Control Commission here who could answer this question directly, but I think the way that it would have to be done would be by administrative rule. There would be, five areas in Salem that were the five subparts of Salem. Now, there is provision already in statute if there is a documented problem at identified locations, identified establishments, they can have targeted sting operations. But this statute doesn't address those at all. It doesn't touch that. All this does would establish for random minor decoy operations.
Yeah, that wasn't my question. My question, okay, say you got five of these areas in Eugene, and if somebody decided that one of these areas of 20,000 was a bigger problem, could you focus more resources into that one area, one of the five areas, if you were random?
Chair Burdick, I don't believe this statute currently addresses that circumstance, nor would these amendments address that circumstance. I think that would more be, I think it would be a resource question right now, for example, if the city of Salem has so many resources to put into random minor decoy operations, they would have to do it on a citywide basis. And I think if it was broken up into five areas, it would still need to be done, conducted on the way that would provide for the most random basis for these operations. So I think within the five sub-areas, it would need to be randomized as well.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Barr?
Senator Burdick, I think you asked the question that is getting to what I was trying to get to is, and I don't know the answer, and I apologize, I don't know that I understood your answer, but if you, Salem, now you, OLCC has to look at Salem as a whole. This bill, if it passes, allows Salem to become five Salems. Is the law then going to say you have to treat all five Salems equally, or you can treat any portion of those individual new five Salems as independents, and you don't have to do this Salem 1 first, and Salem 2, and Salem 3, and Salem 4, Salem 5. Would this bill allow you to do Salem 1, Salem 1, Salem 1, as long as you are random inside that new area?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, it would be my reading of the statute that the Oregon Liquor Controls Commission is supposed to establish by rule and develop uniform standards for minor decoy operations. So I believe the uniform standards would need to say that each of those five areas would be treated the same as well. So not only does it have to be randomized within the area, but that it would, each of the areas would need to be treated.
So now are they required to treat each city in the state equally and random?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, no. I mean, what they do now would be the law enforcement personnel within the city would be able to develop how many resources they wanted to use, I think, and expend for this kind of an operation within the entire metropolitan area. It would be conducted on a randomized basis. Similarly, I think if the city of Salem, for example, were broken up into five geographical areas, the resources that were expended on random minor decoy operations would be expended on an equalized pro rata basis within the five operating areas.
Okay, thank you. Could you bring up somebody from the OLCC?
Certainly.
That's really the crux of the question that we want.
Look at the last two words.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Ignowski. I'm the Enforcement Director for the Liquor Control Commission. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay, if you have five areas of 20,000 and law enforcement tells you that you have a bigger problem in one of these 20,000, can you do all of your minor decoy operations in that one area?
With this bill?
Yes.
According to this bill, it allows us to use an area that's 20,000, has to be at least 20,000 in population, a geographical area. Yes, this bill would allow us to concentrate on that one area, okay, as long as it's random.
Okay. All right, that was our question. Thank you. Senator Pazansky.
So if you had five of these, you wouldn't have to be
random.
So, in following up on this, I'm trying to figure out what the need of this really is. I mean, if they can do random already, of a city the size of Portland, Eugene, or Salem, by dividing it up into smaller portions, what I'm hearing is that then they can concentrate on those different portions individually and independent of the others and still stay random. I'm still trying to figure out why they can't maintain the current law and they're still being random, even though they may be in one area of the city. I'm trying to figure out if there's a requirement geographically that they have to move from one side of the city to the next side, and we're trying to consolidate this to where they can have more flexibility within a geographic area, or why they can't just stay under the current statute and concentrate in the southeast Salem, because that seems to be an area they're having more problems. Because you have the targeted part where you can actually use the targeted provisions to go after a specific licensee, and it seems like you could use the same philosophy for a region or an area of the city.
Chair Burdick, Senator Pazansky, if I might add a comment. Under the current statute, Section 1, Sub 3, mm-hmm. says, for the purpose of implementing standards for random minor decoy operations, the Commission shall by rule adopt a methodology that produces, to the greatest extent possible, an equal chance that any licensee or agent will be subject to a minor decoy operation. That applies on the ground for a metropolitan area such as Portland, that your randomized operation needs to include all of the licensees within the operation area, which in Portland would be everywhere from Beaverton to Gresham, so that if you are trying to use the random operation under this statute, you can't break it down into sub-areas under the current existing statute. The only way you can do it is if you have a targeted, documented problem at a particular establishment.
So this is somewhere in between targeting. If you know that you've got more of a problem in one part of a city than another, then you can target more resources as long as you're random within 20,000. Yes.
Chairman Burdick, really, it's meant more for efficiency, I think, than anything else. For my staff to do Portland, which has a majority of the licensees across the state, we have to do a random list of this entire city of Portland. And since the randomized program that we use, PIXM, doesn't discriminate between areas, I can have staff almost next to Gresham. Then we have places almost next to Beaverton. We have places in southeast Portland and northeast, but we're running all over the place. We can break this up to geographical areas and do it more systematically. It'll be more efficient for law enforcement and for us to do it instead of trying to run all over Portland, trying to do all these on a random basis. You know, to target one area probably isn't really something we really would do. If we have a problem with specific licensees, our current law already allows us to do that. This bill, I think, was meant just to help us be more efficient in our larger cities to conduct these in a more systematic, efficient way than having to take a list of all the licensees, on-premises, off-premises, wineries, and everybody, throw them in a pot, and then we have to hit all of them.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, the concerns from my committee, if you had an amendment to this bill that required you to be random within those 20,000 areas, in other words, you couldn't just focus on one area of 20,000, that you had to be random citywide, but you can do them in some kind of sequence. Would that satisfy your efficiency needs on that?
Chair Burdick, we're nodding our heads. Yes, I think that could be accomplished, and I'd be happy to work with Committee Council Stanford to try and come up with a way of addressing that if that would be what the committee would desire.
Would that make you like the bill better, Senator Prusansky?
I think we could just rewrite that subsection 3 to give the flexibility they need without trying to set up all these little micro geographic areas to give some more flexibility. Because what I'm hearing is that they've got a program in place that they've developed to do the demographics. And because you're applying that program to a larger population base, they're not able to be as efficient. So what they want to do is chop up the cities into these smaller components that gives them more flexibility. And it seems to me an awkward way to write the statute to accomplish that goal.
Well, I think isn't the goal, though, to make sure that nobody is getting unfairly targeted, to be randomized?
But at the same time, you take Portland or you take parts of Eugene where you may have a high intensity of young people and bars that they're going to be servicing, and where you more than likely are going to see let's say violations of the minor drinking serving, those type of things. It seems to me that that's really more what they're trying to capture, is getting to these areas. And there's got to be ways to do it. There's probably 3 or 4 different ways to do this. This just seems a very awkward way to put in statute.
Senator Byer.
Senator Cruz is jumping out of the seat over there.
So.
No, actually, I'm not. I guess I'm confused. It would seem to me, and it's not just bars, it's also grocery stores and wherever liquor can be sold, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay, so they have to do this random thing, and you pull your names out of a hat, and what's to prevent you currently from kind of saying, okay, these are in this area, we'll do a coordinated effort here and move around like that, rather than just going, you know, I think you have the authority to do it under current law, as you get your random assortment and then you coordinate your activities. Why can't you do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, that's kind of how we're doing it now. And it is a little more awkward because we have to complete the entire list before we can start over again. For local law enforcement, for like Portland, you may have some precincts that have the resources to be able to do a ranger decoy in their area. And some of the other precincts may not have the resources to do it. And so what they do is they go out and do the decoy operation. Since they haven't fulfilled the standards of the statute, we cannot sanction the licensee any way administratively if they do so, because they haven't fulfilled the standards of the statute by having the whole city hit by the decoy operation. So it's very awkward for, you know, hopefully OLCC is not the only people that are doing decoys, that law enforcement also have the capability of doing decoy operations. And so it's awkward for them, and we have some precincts that go out and do their own decoy operations. We can't take any administrative action because the whole city of Portland did not participate in the random selection.
Council?
Just one question. Thank you, Chair Burdick. Isn't there a caveat in the statute already, or a kind of an escape clause? Statute says that things need to be random to the greatest extent possible. Is there any kind of court opinion or anything saying what greatest extent possible is? And to the extent that OLCC can't do this because it costs too much, then it's not to the greatest extent possible, and you can do it as you choose.
I'm Chair Burdick, members of the committee. I'm unaware of any appellate court decision that addresses that particularized point. I believe that the interpretation that has been given to that statute by Oregon Liquor Control Commission is that they use a computer-generated random table to generate the selections under the statute, because that is, to the greatest extent practical or possible, a random search. And the administrative costs have not been very well received as justification for doing something or for not doing something that a statutory scheme requires that you do. I don't know that it's been tested, though, however.
Okay, any other questions? Senator Byer?
I'll head up.
Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on this bill and mull it over for a little bit. And we will now open. We're now going to open a public hearing. Is Representative Wisnett here yet? Okay. I think we'll do those bills. So we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3442 and 3445, and we will be changing councils for those. Our timing is perfect. Here comes Representative Wisnett. I opened both of these. Do you want to do them separately? Council.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. House Bill 3442A and 3445A address some issues that have arisen in the Sun River Service District over the enforcement of traffic laws there. House Bill 3442A expands the definition of a police officer under the Vehicle Code to include a law enforcement officer employed by a county law enforcement service district. Under current law, a county service district may construct, maintain, and operate a law enforcement service facility. Employees of these service facilities are not specifically included in the definition of persons authorized to enforce the traffic code. This omission creates ambiguity regarding the authority of service district officers to issue citations for traffic violations. House Bill 3442A clarifies that employees of a county service district are officers for the purpose of enforcing the traffic code. Similarly, House Bill 3445A expands the definition of a highway within the Oregon Vehicle Code, declares an emergency. The Sun River Service District was established in 2002, and most of the roads within the service district are owned by the Sun River Homeowners Association. Currently, these privately owned roads do not fall within the Vehicle Code's definition of highway, and most of the Vehicle Code's traffic violations only apply to highways. House Bill 3445A adds premises open to the public that are owned by a homeowners association and whose boundaries are contained within a service district established on or before July 1st, 2002, which would be simply Sun River and Black Butte, to the definition of the highway for the purposes of enforcing traffic offenses.
Okay, we have Representative Wisnett, and you will be joined very shortly by Senator Westland, who also wanted to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Committee members, good afternoon. I'm Representative Gene Wisnett, District 53. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you very, very much for hearing these two bills that are related. This is an important bill for the community I live in. I live in Sun River. And it's a public safety issue that we would appreciate your help. I'm going to let the people speaking afterwards give you the details and answer the questions. We have support from the county, the sheriff's departments, and know of no opposition to these bills. Maybe some opposition by people who speed in Sun River, but that's the only opposition we know, Madam Chair.
They're not here today.
Any questions? Otherwise, I'll leave the details to explain and answer your questions about why we got where we are. We had a quick and smooth hearing in the House with the experts testifying, my friends and neighbors from Sun River. So if you have any questions for me, Madam Chair, I'll be glad to try to answer.
Questions for Representative Wisnett? Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for
here. Council, could you go over, one of these bills has a technical problem. Could you tell us which one it is and the nature of the problem?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. When House Bill 3442 was passed out of committee, there was a conceptual amendment that was made by the committee to add some clarifying language that it was a law enforcement service district that we were talking about. And when that amendment was submitted to Legislative Council, they wanted it to say for the purposes of law enforcement service district. So they asked for that technical fix.
And so we will be...
Madam Chair, what happened is it said service district. And what we have, as you'll hear, is we have a service district for law enforcement and a service district for fire prevention.
Right. And so you support the amendment
yes.
to clear up this technical
yes,
issue.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Is it the A2s you're talking about?
No, yes.
We already have them?
No, sorry. No.
The A2s are a problem, okay. So we'll have to hold at least 3442. Okay, why don't we go ahead and start with, trying to figure out. We'll start with 3445. We have a little bit of a different witness list. Doug Cedar and Scott Hartung.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Scott Hartung, President of the Sun River Owners Association. Thank you for this opportunity to testify here today. The Sun River Owners Association strongly supports House Bill 3445A because it allows the Sun River Police to enforce traffic offenses contained in the Oregon Vehicle Code on Sun River's roads while preserving Sun River Owners Association private ownership and regulation over the roadways. While other communities and commercial areas have private roads that are open to the public, Sun River is unique in that it is a resort and not just a residential community. The fact that Sun River is a major resort creates unique issues that do not arise in typical communities with homeowner associations. Sun River Owners Association needs to retain its rulemaking authority to ensure that Sun River continues to be a place to live and to visit. Sun River is widely recognized as a premier family destination resort and has a reputation of being a very safe place in which to enjoy outdoor activities. The safety of our owners and visitors is very important to the community, which has supported its own police since our way was created in 1973. The Sun River community wants full enforcement of the Oregon Vehicle Code on Sun River roads. As of today, more than 2,000 owners have signed petitions in support of this bill. In addition, there is support from the community of Black Butte Ranch, the county commissioners, the district attorney, and both service districts for Sun River and Black Butte. We ask you to help ensure the public safety in Sun River by sending House Bill 3445A to the full Senate with a due pass recommendation. That concludes my testimony, unless there are any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, I just want clarification. Maybe council can give us this. Looking at the bill itself in subsection 2 of section 1, where it gives for the purpose of enforcing the Oregon Vehicle Code, it says a highway includes premises open to the public that are owned by a homeowners association whose boundaries are contained within a service district established by on or before July of 2002. Looking at the statute 451, that's just the general stuff for service districts. Do we know how many service districts will be included in this change? I understand Sun River and Black Butte, but I assume there's other service districts. I'm just wondering how broad this goes statewide.
Chair Burdick, Senator Przanski, actually, my understanding is it will actually only be those two service districts, but I think there might be somebody that could.
Okay.
Yeah, I can confirm that was the intent, was to very narrowly define the areas that would be affected, and as it's written, it would only be the service districts for Black Butte Ranch and for Sun River.
Okay, I just want that on the record, and part of my area that I actually serve as a prosecutor, there are these homeowners associations who do not want to have this type of approach for their areas, and I just want to make sure that they're not being wrapped into it without their consent.
Thank you for getting that on the record, Senator Przanski. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Doug Cedar, and I'm chair of the Sun River Service District Managing Board. The authority to stop vehicles for minor violations of the Oregon Vehicle Code, examples being speeding, running a stop sign, or even a broken taillight, is a major tool for law enforcement in maintaining public safety. Based on the uncertainty of the classification of Sun River roads, the Sun River Police are currently not using that tool. In 2006, last year, the Sun River Police made 3,337 stops for violations of the Oregon Vehicle Code. If Sun River roads are not considered highways, only 1% or 37 of those stops could have been made. We want to provide the Sun River Police with the authority that they need to maintain public safety at the highest possible level. House Bill 344A accomplishes that objective, and we ask your support for the bill. As I think has been mentioned before, the Sun River Owners Association, the Sun River Service District, Black Butte Ranch, the Deschutes County Board of County Commissioners, the Deschutes County District Attorney all support the bill, and that we would request when you pass the legislation, it's with an emergency clause, so it goes into effect immediately upon the governor's signature. Now, we appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and if you have questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Welcome, and sorry I didn't call you the first time, but glad you came up.
Chair Burdick, I'm not scheduled to talk to this bill. I was just up here for moral support.
Okay. Can you introduce yourself for the record?
Yes, ma'am. I am Chief Mike Kennedy of the Sun River Police Department.
Okay, great. Thank you for being here. Does anybody have any questions for Chief Kennedy? Thank you. Okay, Brian DeLashmet, Ron Burback, and Erica Hagedorn.
Extremely quickly, Brian DeLashmet representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. We followed this bill and the other bill on the House side, and we're satisfied with the bill the way they're drafted. The one problem that we saw with the original drafting, which is that clarification, is law enforcement districts. Because we read it that it could be almost any service district could in fact start enforcing these things, and that was our request to have that actually clarified.
But that was under the other bill.
Actually, I think both bills were unclear about service districts, but it may be under 3442. But we're fine with both bills the way they are, and would support them without amendments, additional amendments, other than the clarifying amendment on the 3442.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Erica Hagedorn here on behalf of Deschutes County. Just a quick me too. The Board of Commissioners is the governing body for the special law enforcement district, so we just want to voice our support today.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Walker?
Yeah, there's an e-clause on 3445, but not on 3442. So even if you give them the right to cite, you would need an e-clause on 3442 to classify them as a law enforcement officer.
Council, is that correct?
Chair Burdick and Senator Walker, I actually observe that same thing, but I think the position of Sun River is that they were more concerned about the definition because that also covered some of the traffic crimes, and their position currently is that they feel that the ambiguity that's created by the definition is not precluding their enforcement at this time, but it's going to help to clarify and prevent future court challenges. But I think it would be appropriate to have an emergency clause on both, but they simply didn't request it.
Well, they might not request it, but if I was to get a ticket by one of their law enforcement officers, I would challenge it on that basis.
Well, Senator Walker, you are in luck, because we're going to have an amendment drafted anyway to that bill.
I mean, I'm just trying to make sure the tickets work.
That's right, and then don't hang out there, because you'll probably get one.
I've never been speeding through Sun River.
Okay. Any other questions?
You'll admit to.
No.
Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3445, and I believe this bill is ready to go, so I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3445. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3445 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 3445 to Senate floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer, would you like to carry
Westland.
This? Westland. Westland will carry this.
Westland.
Thank you for reminding me, Senator.
We'd like to share the wealth.
Well, since we didn't, we stiffed him out of his testimony, we'll let him carry the bill. How about that? Okay. Thank you very much. And now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3442. We have a little bit of a different list here. Mike Kennedy has signed up for this one, and Brian again. And I'll take the Beaverton people later. Brian DeLashmit and Mike Kennedy. Nope. I did, and then I opened it especially on 3442.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Mike Kennedy. I'm the Chief of Police of the Sun River Police Department. I'm here today in support of House Bill 3442, which will add the Service District Police to the definition of police officer for the purpose of the Oregon Motor Vehicle Code. When ORS 801395 was written, there were no Service District Police Departments in Oregon. Over two decades later, there are two such agencies, Black Butte and Sun River Police Department. The ability of any police officer to enforce traffic laws is an essential tool for keeping the communities we serve safe. Obviously, it directly affects our ability to keep our streets safe. However, it also is a major tool in detecting and deterring criminal activity. As an example, in 2006, 73% of our drug arrests, 70% of our DUI arrests, 53% of our warrant arrests were all made as a direct result of minor traffic violations. This bill is extremely important to our agencies as well as to the communities we serve. I respectfully ask for your support in the passage of this bill, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. Do you have any questions?
Thank you very much. Questions for Chief Kennedy?
Mr. Brian DeLashman, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. We, too, followed this bill on the House side, and we think it's a good bill. Thank you.
Great. And you, again, you support the technical amendment.
Technical amendment to clarify the law enforcement district language.
Right. Yeah. And you also support an emergency clause?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Thank you very much. Our next witness is Alan Raplea and Jim Monger, maybe?
That's correct.
We'll get it cleared up in a minute here.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. My name is Alan Rapoyer. I'm the City of Beaverton City Attorney, and I have Sergeant Jim Monger here of the Traffic Division of the City of Beaverton here to talk about a proposed very minor amendment to this bill, which I've handed out, and which we have for an LC draft 823025. And what we're proposing is to just a very minor amendment to the definition, and currently it's defined as police officer means a police officer. So that's a sort of a technical problem, and we propose to fix that by, say, a police officer means a city marshal or member of the police of a city. And this would help the city of Beaverton out in that and clarify a position for the people who are in our photo radar vans. And those are retired police officers, and the legislature was well aware of that when we passed the photo radar legislation, and they knew that we're going to put retired police officers, but there's potentially challenges to the law that they are not police officers. So this minor amendment would basically just take something that's already in 154, a definition under enforcement officer, and move it back into the vehicle code. It used to be in the vehicle code, but through some of the permutations of the changes in the vehicle code, it was put into Chapter 154. And so we'd like to have that put right back into this vehicle code. Again, it's only for purposes of enforcing the vehicle code. So that'd
so
be just
this wouldn't affect Sun River and Black Butte, though,
no,
correct?
No.
This is just a vehicle to, as it were, to accomplish something else.
That's correct. And again, we support the bill for Sun River's purposes. We just want this very minor technical amendment to be made to clarify the City of Beaverton's enforcement process.
Okay. Mr. Mondes, did you want to add anything?
I'm here for any questions.
My name is Jim Monger, the police sergeant for the City of Beaverton, and I'm here to lend my support to this and to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Okay. Could we get Mr. DeLashment back here? He's still here.
This bill is growing, Madam Chair.
Well, that was my concern because you signed up testifying in favor with no amendments, so I wanted to give you a chance to.
Again, Brian DeLashment, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. We saw these amendments around 11 o'clock. I believe that even though they've been portrayed as just dealing with vehicle code on this particular situation, what we're really talking about is the expansion of the use of reserve officers in this state, and we would oppose that without further discussions on the appropriate and appropriate use of reserve officers in this state to do what typically certified officers do, which is traffic code violations and other law enforcement activities.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? This is very late in the session, and I committed to do these bills. I think you might want to continue this discussion in the interim and solve the problem that you're trying to solve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 3442. And we will
wait for a minute.
Yeah, we're going to wait for an amendment on that emergency clause and the technical amendment. And is Mr. Taylor here? He is. We will open a hearing on House Bill 2311. Because I now want to see this on my agenda again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm members of the committee, House Bill 2311.
You're talking to the mic.
Okay. Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2311 comes to you from, among others, the Association of Oregon Counties, the League of Cities, Oregon Collectors Association. Eliminates the court facilities or local court facilities account, sets the interest at the statutory rate of 9%, allows the state court administrator to waive interest for the purpose of administering a collection of judgments in state courts, allows the municipal court judge and justice of the peace to do the same, requires payment be applied first to principal, then to interest in state courts, allows monies collected at interest in state courts to be used to pay costs of collections, and monies left over to be paid to criminal injuries compensation account, allows monies collected as interest in local courts to be used to pay costs of collections, and additional monies left over to be paid to local government. Allows interest to be accrued for 20 years from the date of judgment, and after that, no interest would accrue. You have the A4 amendments in front of you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I think Senator Walker is aware of these. That would address an issue in Senate Bill 629, and they total the running is the 20-year period for interest computations while the debtor is in prison on the sentence for which the monetary obligation was imposed.
Okay, Senator Walker, did you want to comment on your amendments now that you know that they're here?
Well, I knew about them, that they were being created. I have a bill, Senate Bill 629, I believe it is, that you all passed out of this committee, and it is in House Judiciary and should have been passed by now, I think, that stops the running of interest on judgments while someone is incarcerated. It doesn't stop payment of the judgment, it just stops running of the interest. And then the interest starts collecting once they have been discharged from their incarceration, whether that's through probation or parole. There was a conflict that came up in the discussion in the House Judiciary Committee that this would conflict with House Bill 2311, which put a 20-year limit on interest. So I wanted to make it clear that an inmate does not get a free ride, and that 20-year period does not start to run until they are discharged, so they don't get a free ride here. So that's what this amendment is intended to correct.
Okay. In council, you've looked over the amendment. It looks like it accomplishes what it is supposed to do.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it does.
Okay. We are actually up in a hearing, but it's actually a work session. I fooled you. So I would, at this point, ask for a motion from Senator Beyer on the Dash 4 amendment.
Madam Chair, move that amendment to House Bill 2311.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 4 amendment to House Bill 2311. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer?
Madam Chair, the amendment makes a bad bill a better bill. But so if Senator Pruszynski would like to move the bill as amended, that would be great.
Okay. Senator Pruszynski?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2311 as amended to the floor with a D-pass recommendation.
Senator Pruszynski has moved House Bill 2311 as amended to the Senate floor with a D-pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. The underlying bill is actually a very good bill. It's required. If you want to start collecting interest on criminal judgments, you aren't going to get it without this bill, because they haven't been able to do it up till this point, and this bill is going to help do that. My amendment, or my bill that's long gone and hopefully will become law, simply says you can't collect interest while they're an inmate. But the underlying bill here, if you want any interest to be collected, you're going to need this bill.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess my feeling is that this bill sets a 20-year cap on interest payments, and that's what the amendment makes it a better bill, because it says it's people who are in prison for 20 plus years with under the idea that the earlier bill, whichever the number was, that they would get a free ride if never having to pay any interest. But I don't necessarily agree with the idea of stopping interest after 20 years, which is what the original bill does. In addition to the idea that the payments go to principal first instead of interest, I never did buy into that after our first hearing on the bill.
Okay, thank you for that elaboration. I had forgotten about your opposition to this, Senator Beyer. My apologies. Would you take the roll, please?
No.
Senator Stockton?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Chair Britt?
Aye.
Senator Walker, would you like to carry this?
Oh, sure.
Oh, good. Okay. We will open a... we've got people here on the... vulnerable user. I'm going to skip up to that. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3314.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3314 comes to you at the request of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. You have the Dash A6 amendments in front of you. They rewrite the bill, and what they do, starting over on page 2 under the RS 118-135, a person commits the offense of careless driving, then if they commit that, it says in addition to any of their penalty, if the court determines the commission of the offense contributing to serious physical injury, death, or the vulnerable use of the public way, the court shall order the person to complete a traffic safety course and to perform between 100 and 200 hours of community service. And then going over the page 1, Section 3, a person commits the offense of failure to complete a traffic safety course and perform community service if the person is ordered to complete traffic safety course and does not do so. A person in violation of this section is subject to a $12,500 fine and suspension of driving privileges. Madam Chair, members of the committee. As I said, the amendments replace the bill.
Okay. We have a panel, Scott Bricker, Doug Perro, and Ray Thomas.
Did you have fun today in some judiciary?
Probably as much as you have, Madam Chair.
Welcome, all of you.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Doug Perro. I'm a member of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance Board of Directors. Actually, I live in locally here in Kaiser. I really appreciate you taking the time to have a hearing on this bill. And let me talk. I'll talk just briefly about why it is that the BTA asked for the introduction of the bill. We were seeing situations in which individuals, pedestrians and bicyclists in particular, were killed or were seriously injured in crashes with motor vehicles. And the driver of the motor vehicle was charged with careless driving, which is, if in the case of an accident, is a Class A traffic infraction. Under those kinds of circumstances, then, the driver of the vehicle can simply mail in the fine, and there really are no other additional repercussions than in those situations. And we think that in a case in which somebody has been careless, that it is insufficient to simply mail in a fine for a traffic infraction. The House Committee, the House Judiciary Committee, heard testimony from family members of three victims in these kinds of situations. One of those victims was a young woman up in the Portland area who was crossing in a crosswalk legally and was run over by a jacked-up pickup. The driver was charged with careless driving, mailed in the fine, fairly modest fine, and that was pretty much the end of it. Another of the victims was a bicyclist riding a bicycle over in the Weston area. This particular bicyclist was riding on a road with a relatively wide shoulder, was well to the right of the shoulder of this road, and was run down by a woman and killed. As a matter of fact, the button that I'm wearing is a picture of that woman. Her husband prepared these buttons to really remind people of the kind of tragedy there in terms of and the impact on him and on both of them as a result of this particular situation. The committee also heard testimony from the wife of a bicyclist who had been riding down in the Medford area and had been run over by a vehicle as the bicyclist was trying to execute a left turn legally and consistent with the statutes. That particular cyclist suffered serious head injuries that are going to be with him for the rest of his life. They were life-threatening head injuries. Now, in each of these cases, the behavior of the driver that killed or seriously injured those individuals, in the view of the charging authorities, did not rise to the level of recklessness that would be necessary in order to proceed in a criminal case. And just as a reminder, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, I'll just quickly read the definition of reckless just to make clearly establish what is going on here. Reckless, when used with respect to a result or a circumstance described by statute defining offense, means that a person is aware of and consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. The risk must be of such nature and degree that disregard thereof constitutes a gross deviation from standard of care that a reasonable person would observe in the situation. So in these particular situations in which motor vehicle operators killed or seriously injured other users of the road, the charging authorities concluded that the behavior did not rise to that level. The behavior did not create the basis for a criminal penalty, and therefore the next available option then in terms of charging was for careless driving in the situation of case of traffic, class A traffic infraction, and in which the perpetrator can simply mail in their fine. The House Committee also heard from a Portland Police Department policeman who supported the approach and expressed the same concern that we're seeing, that there is that gap there between a crash in which fundamentally the vehicle operator is not at fault and a crash in which the behavior of the perpetrator rises to that level of recklessness. And the policeman acknowledged that having seen situations in which it really seemed that the driver should be charged with something more than careless, but it did not rise to the level of reckless. So, as the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, we have worked hard to find a reasonable approach to address these kinds of situations. And we believe that House Bill 3314, as amended by the House and then passed with bipartisan support over there, and now is before you with some additional proposed changes in order to address some of the issues that have been resolved. We believe that that we have proposed and are moving forward and asking you to move forward with a reasonable approach to these kinds of situations.
Okay. Senator Brzezinski, did you work with these folks on the amendment to this?
We did have discussions, and unfortunately, because of my schedule, I wasn't able to stay at the last meeting that we were ironing out the last, I believe the dash A6s cover that. And so, and I know Council Taylor was there, and he may have some other insight too.
And Chairman, as a committee, I had to leave early because I had to go to a House Judiciary Committee meeting. So I was there for
half.
I left about the same time. Yeah.
So who did the amendments? Who did the amendments then?
Well, we had a legislative council there. We had three people from legislative council that was at that meeting. Uh-huh. Dave Hendricks, Heidi, and there's another gentleman that was also sitting to her left. I forget who that was.
And then you all were there?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, of Scott Bricker, the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and the Lyman Pedestrian Coalition. In addition, we've had working very closely with a variety of House representatives, including Representative Reed, who was there, Representative Olson, Representative Krieger, who weren't there. We've been talking very closely with them. ODOT, the Oregon Department of Justice, the Office of Public Defense and Services, the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers, and we've had conversations with Portland police officers, Multnomah County DAs, and judges, individual judges, to help us get to this product. So we have had a lot of discussions with a lot of different folks, and this is a product of really a collaborative effort in that way.
And so all the folks you've named have, and Troy Costellas is signed up here, but all the folks you've named have bought off on this?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, everyone is supportive, I believe, of the direction that we are taking. There are some small tweak suggestions that have also been made. We just got these amendments about an hour ago. So they are really more procedural, excuse me, than they are substantive in how they would change how this bill would proceed, or policy oriented in the sense of changing levels of the number of hours of community service, for example. So that, to my understanding, we don't have any opposition to the state opposition to this bill, except for maybe a small couple of concerns. But again, those are mostly administrative.
Okay. So basically, since these amendments were a little unusual in some regards, fines for not going to traffic safety school, for example. So was it your wish to maybe have another day to maybe tweak these if they need to be tweaked?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do think if it's possible, there are a couple of things we would like to clean up ultimately, yes. From a small definition of making sure we have the right farm vehicle cited in this, because this also deals with tractors and highway workers, to making sure that there are a couple of small tweak issues. And so the answer to that is yes.
Thank you. And does that complete your testimony?
Madam Chairman of the Committee, I think that would be fine. We had other, of course, other things. We could have explained the bill more, but for now, I think we're in a good position to move forward. Thank you.
Mr. Thomas, did you want to add anything?
No, Madam Chair, thank you. And unless anybody has a question that relates to some of the legal and procedural mechanisms of the bill, I'm content to go to work.
Just so we'll know that you are here, would you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, my name is Ray Thomas. I'm a member of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance Legislative Committee and a practicing lawyer in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you. We are interested in this bill, so we'll look forward to working with you in the waning days of our committee.
Thank you.
Troy Costellas? Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costellas, Administrator of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The original Dash A bill had some concerns from ODOT relationship to our role for a fee collected and the indigent process for people going through the safety course. The Dash 6 amendments alleviate all of our procedural concerns as well as some of the overarching concerns. The written testimony that you have from me is related to the Dash A bill, not the Dash 6 amendments. So the Dash 6 amendments do address the two or three things that we had raised in the work group earlier this week related to that.
Can we get clarification? So the letter that's dated today reflects a earlier draft, does not reflect your position as of the A6?
That is correct. I saw the A6 as when we walked into the hearing room today. So this was written on the Dash A bill.
So at least from what you know now, you support the A6.
Madam Chair, yeah, there are no issues from ODOT's point of view on the A6s.
Okay, that's great. If you would just continue to work with them on final tweaks, we would very much be in your debt.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. There was a list of people who worked on this bill given, and I didn't write it down, and Troy.
Don't get away.
The concern that I have is this, is I heard a lot of people speaking for the bicycle people, the walkers, everybody but the major users and the people who pay for the highways, and that's the people who drive the cars. And is that, if you were there, was that your position, that you were there speaking for, 98% of the public, the people who drive cars?
Senator Beyer, the work group earlier this week was dealing with the Dash A bill. And in the bill as presented to you in its current form, ODOT had the role of receiving fees from the courts to put into an account that in turn ODOT would use to pay for those that were indigent in order to go to a safety course or any other services of special needs that were needed for someone going to the course. My representation earlier this week was the fact that we don't do that. We don't collect funds from the court, nor do we pay for indigent costs, and that was a whole new type of work. And we, that was the position from the, relating to the incidents of vehicle drivers, careless, reckless in relationship to vulnerable road users, that is a concern of ODOT's. We don't want to see death or injury by any means, let alone a situation where someone may be vulnerable, because we're talking about 1,300 instances per year where a bicyclist or pedestrian is killed or seriously injured with a motor vehicle around the state. And the attempt to raise the awareness, the attempt to put an appropriate sentence and communication around those that exhibit careless or reckless behavior, injuring or killing a bicyclist or a pedestrian or the vulnerable user group that's here, can go towards an effort of reducing death and injury in Oregon's roads and streets. My role at that work group was not representing the drivers. It was around the technical application of the bill as far as our involvement with the fines and the fees.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pisanski?
I just want to put on the record, just to make certain that we understand who the vulnerable users of a public way include. Who's a pedestrian, a highway worker, a person riding an animal or operating one of the following, which is a farm vehicle, a skateboard, roller skates, inline skates, a scooter, or a bicycle. I would submit, besides those that are minors that are not eligible to have a driver's license, the overwhelming individuals that are involved in those activities are, in fact, also drivers of motor vehicles on our roadways. They don't do an exclusiveness. There's very few people that rely exclusively on one of these forms of transportation that would be eligible and do, in fact, drive vehicles. They are multi-users of the roadways.
Thank you, Senator Brzezinski. And Representative Beyer, we also had, I remember hearing Representative Krieger's name on that list.
And Andy Olson.
And Andy Olson. I think they would probably reflect some of your concerns.
Law enforcement?
Maybe. Okay. All right. We're going to close the public hearing on this bill, and we are going to open a work session on House Bill 2324. And change counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2324A is the bill that this committee heard yesterday dealing with the doctrine of mootness, and it would enact the capable of repetition but evading review exception to the mootness doctrine. This committee was audience to a fascinating discussion from some preeminent constitutional law scholars. I know Senator Burdick enjoyed it. Before the committee are the dash A3s, which reflect consensus amendments. And other than that, I could answer any questions that the committee might have.
Committee, I talked with Mr. Hinkle after the hearing yesterday, and he does support the dash A3 amendments, and I think this will be a positive addition to Oregon law. It'll allow our courts to provide the kind of service and clarity that we count on them for.
Madam Chair, we're in work session, aren't we?
We are in work session.
Move the dash A3 amendments in House Bill 2324.
Senator Beyer has moved the dash A3 amendments in the House Bill 2324. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Beyer?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2324 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2324 into the to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. I will carry this. And we are moving.
That was the amended bill.
As amended. Yes. We've referred it as amended to Senate floor. Again.
Just to be sure.
It's been a long session, everyone. Everything that wasn't dealt with today will be carried over to Tuesday's agenda. My apologies for people whose bills I didn't get to. We are adjourned.